Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, StudentUnionSports.com proudly presents to you Lecture Hall!
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Lecture Hall, brought to you by Student Union Sports. It's your boys, Big Hoppa, Harrison Shooter Stillings. The boys are in the house. Judah, hit me with a syllabus.
What is up? Class is in session. This week's syllabus is jam-packed. We had the San Diego Padres hitting grand slams in 5 out of 6 games. Come on.
Five out of six.
Yeah. We have the Chicago White Sox also on a home run tear of their own. I forgot to look up the numbers. Aggressively mediocre. But if you do look it up, it is a very impressive offensive tear that the Chicago White Sox are on. The 76ers,
I think it was like 11 over the 3 games against the Cubs or so.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
11 home runs is quite a few. They're not grand slams, but that's quite a few home runs. The 76ers have fired head coach Brett Brown. And to get to the NHL, my Bruins, Eastern Conference semifinals,
yes.
Up 1-0 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Shout out Bucky. The New York Islanders are a wagon, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are at home. Our main topics on today.
Place a bet on the Lightning plus 750 to win the cup today. So,
out of pure spite.
Absolutely.
Our actual topics for the show. We're talking about Luka's game-winning shot to not even win the series, but tie the series at 2 games apiece, and then ranking our top five. NBA players, current NBA players, not all time. That's a more difficult list. We're breaking down the NFC West because we forgot to break down a division last week. I have a personal message with Bryson DeChambeau after some personal breaking news today. We'll get to at the end. And we have an interview with Danny Vietti, an all-time name. Sounds like he could star in Grease. CBS Sports baseball writer. Great interview with him. Before we throw it to Danny, Hoppa's going to give you a little message about our sponsor, Gibbs Grooming.
Yeah. I don't know if you folks know this or not, but I don't know how much you can see. Let me get in the camera. Yeah, this beard is coming in filthily, but in a good way. Absolutely filthy beard I got coming. I mean, the neck needs a little bit of trimming up, which I'm going to do. And you know what I'm going to use to do it? The sharp-dressed mane shaved gel, all right? I'm going to use that. I'm going to get a nice crisp razor. I'm going to clean up the neck. I'm going to make this thing pop. I'm going to clean up the cheeks. I'm going to throw a little Colorado Kid. Oh, I could. Or I could throw in any one of the other 4 beard oils. I could throw in the Voodoo Prince if I wanted to. I got 5 of these things. I got the sample pack just so I can throw it on whenever I want, see which one I'm feeling that day. Otherwise, I got the regular red one. I forget what it's called. But that's my main go-to. Get it all up in there. Get it nice and oiled up. And I'm looking fresh. This thing is coming through. This is like 4 weeks of keeping it nice. The baby's pulling on it. Folks, you need to get yourself some Gibbs. All right. GibbsGrooming.com. GibbsGrooming.com. GibbsGrooming.com for 15% off using the code HALL15. Use the code HALL15, HALL15. That's going to get you 15% off. I don't know if you people know this or not. We're the only people that offer this. All right. Nobody else is doing this. All right. None of the other podcasts you listen to are just giving out 15% off on GibbsGrooming.com. Okay, so go get you some beard oil, some sharp-dressed mane shave gel. Go get the Biofuel conditioner. Makes my hair feel like an absolute field of happiness. Okay, folks? So go ahead, GibbsGrooming.com, HALL15 for 15% off. Go get yours today.
All right, let's hand it over to Danny.
All right, we're here with Danny Vietti, a writer for CBS Sports, the MLB section. Big Padres guy, made a pretty interesting bet, interesting tweet with the Padres streak of grand slams. Also, a washed up throw of the baseball. Danny, I don't know if you know this, but I have my high school hat on. I have my high school jersey on. I am also a washed up throw of the baseball. How hard were you pumping it back in the day?
Not hard enough, or I would have still been playing. I wouldn't be sitting here on a desk. I'm probably in the same position as you were. I think back in my heyday, probably upper 80s at my best. I mean, when I really got the blood pumping, the adrenaline going in a regional game, it's probably the best I ever felt. But obviously wasn't good enough.
Hey, you know, even upper 80s is a little much for me. I was big upper 70s guy, maybe dot the zone a little. Mixing the curveball every so often, and it was pretty electric stuff for me. You gotta, you know, when you're throwing when it's 45 degrees out at the end of April, it's hard to get that blood flowing, right? So
yeah, no, I could only imagine. We had a series scheduled in Idaho one year in January. So that was off to a rocking start. I don't know who planned that in the schedule, but that was doomed from the start.
Oh, that sounds terrible. Cause like Idaho's like legitimate mountains. It's not even like California. Cause you're a Cali kid. You're a Cali bro.
Yeah, no, we're soft when it comes to cold weather. Like it gets below 60 degrees and we're like, yeah, we got to call it blue. Like we need to have a whole meeting with the umpiring crew, tell them why it's not good for our bodies, why it's not good for our health. And then we kind of go our separate ways. That's kind of the way it works in California.
That's awesome. You just have like medical charts, in the old ibuprofen or Advil commercials. They would have like the areas of the body that are on fire, and you're like, this but cold.
Exactly. No, you just nailed the image perfectly right there.
Oh, awesome. So speaking of cold, it had to be a little cold. Let's go back. So, Lamb, where are you from?
Like we mentioned before the podcast, I've been homering hard on the Padres this year. There's no doubt about it, but they're a fun team. And I actually grew up a Giants fan, to the surprise.
Whoa, that's kind of like, I guess it's not like quite like fruit.
Yeah, I mean, I tried from a national perspective. I really tried throwing all that bias out the window, but I mean, we're all people at the end of the day. And I think nowadays I root for players as opposed to teams now more so than anything.
I love it. So one of the guys that you've been, as I think most of America has been rooting for, is, like I mentioned, the San Diego Padres, Fernando Tatis Jr. And kind of everything, let me set the stage. So we have the 3-0 Grand Slam. The baseball world goes nuts. As younger fans of baseball, we're not fans of the older way to do it. We like the swinging 3-0. But so then Tatis hits that one. And for the next three games after that, for four straight games, the Slam Diego Padres, tough to say, hit grand slams. It's the first time it's ever happened in baseball history. You can go to 1871 in Baseball Reference and you won't find another four game stretch of having grand slams. And so on that fourth one, you're shaking your head. Set the stage for me. What was going through your head with this tweet? I don't know how many, I'm sure a lot of people know, but just set the stage for us.
Yeah. I'll just give you a little bit of context here. I was just visiting my parents in Sacramento, so they live about 10 minutes away from the Capitol. And I was just sitting at home, and I'm like, there's no way they hit a grand slam in four straight games. It's never happened in Major League history. The only team that's ever done it three straight times was the Cleveland Spiders. And, you know, they were called the Spiders, so that can give you an idea of when that happened. So I was like, there's no chance. I'm like, let's just cling on to it. There were a couple of the radio guys who I knew down there, and one guy said, Ben Woods, he's on the Ben Woods show down in San Diego. He said, I'll wear a diaper on the show tomorrow if this happens. So people just kind of latched onto it. And sure enough, man, Eric Hosmer, bases loaded. What amazes me is the grand slams are impressive. There's no doubt about it. It's crazy that they hit four straight grand slams. What I'm most impressed by is that they've had that many opportunities for Grand Slam. Because I can't think back in my own career to where we had bases loaded every single game. They had a chance to go six straight. And they went five out of six. They went four straight. And then the game after their fourth straight Grand Slam, they had a bases loaded opportunity. It was Hosmer, actually, and he grounded out, if I'm not mistaken. And then they hit another one the next day. But to me, it's just crazy that they've had the bases loaded situation and just have an exact bases loaded situation.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. Like, in my little league days, like, well, up until like high school, I was like, I would hit, but I don't know how many times I like actually had the bases juiced. Let alone once I got to high school, I was a PO. I didn't even throw that hard. So that says a lot, like we just were talking about. So it's insane, like you're saying, like the statistical probability of coming up with the bases. I mean, guys come up like most guys in a single season probably get like 6, 8, maybe 10 at bats if you're a middle of the order hitter. Let alone having like 4 or 5 games where as a collective team you're like got like 30 plate appearances with the bases juiced. So it's just like incredible. And then for the ball to leave the yard, let, you know, other than coming up a wall short, you know, short of the wall, rounding out, popping it up in the infield was just like just so insane. But I like, talk to me about the first one, because like you're a great follow on Twitter. Like I don't even know how I stumbled onto your stuff, but
appreciate
I think,
that. Thank you.
Of course, you know what I mean. It's just the truth. So, I love your stuff, and so talk to me, somebody who's from California like that. And are there other writers you know that are older where you guys don't see eye to eye on the whole thing, on the whole swinging 3-0 thing?
Yeah, that's a super good question. That's actually a question I haven't gotten before, but to answer your question, yeah. I'd say there's definitely a majority and minority. I think everybody is going down the right direction. I think for the most part, most of the writers, most of the players, coaches, they're very on maybe, you know, just having a little bit more fun. The game's changed, and I think it's gotten to the point, especially from a writer's perspective, if you don't acclimate and you don't change yourselves, you're going to get left in the dust. And that doesn't mean as a player, that means as a writer, it means anybody involved in Major League Baseball. Because if you don't adapt to the new culture and you're kind of a guy that looks at it from the outside and you're like, I don't love Ronald Acuna doing his bat flips. I don't love the way Juan Soto plays. They're not going to want to hire you for one. Nobody's going to want to read your stuff. Number two. And it's just kind of a culture change. And again, if you don't change with it, you're going to be left behind because it's just the way it is. And if you're constantly the, you know, the Goose Gossages, if you will, of the game, you're just going to be like, I hate to put it blunt, you're just going to be called a boomer for your entire career. And you're not going to get anywhere. So I think for the most part, people adapt really well. A lot of the guys I know that I work with, my colleagues, they're all for it. So I think there is a mixture. I think the majority are for swinging 3-0. And at the end of the day, I thought it was a good thing for the game because there was one person really that didn't enjoy that swinging of 3-0, and it was Chris Woodward, the Rangers manager. Everybody else came to bat for Tatis after that. Everybody said Tatis swing 3-0. Bauer came out. Hosmer said he had a conversation with him, but later he said that he was swing 3-0 kid, you know. And even Jace Tingler, the manager, at first he said he wasn't happy with it, but then he came back the next day and said, look, I told him to take a pitch. That's why I wasn't happy about it. So the point is he wasn't unhappy that he swung 3-0. He was unhappy that he swung and he missed the sign. And I think that's the key part of that whole situation is Tingler's for swinging 3-0. The only person that wasn't for that entire situation was Chris Woodward. Wasn't the pitcher. Pitcher was just doing what his coach wanted him to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think it's cool that you bring that up, and like, it's kind of tough. I mean, we've seen – is it tough for you? Obviously, we saw another I don't even really want to, like, bring attention to it, but the whole Tom Brenneman thing. You know, in our daily lives, I have a discussion. Us on Student Union, like, we're all from different areas. Like I said, myself, when we were doing the meet and greet thing, I'm from Wisconsin. Harrison's from Michigan, but is a Red Sox fan. We have guys that are all spread out. And one of our guys is from the Cincinnati area. And so he was like, you know, this is somebody I've grown up listening to for the last, you know, for his entire, he's, you know, middle 20s now. Do you think it's hard sometimes to get that contrast? Because, like, you have a lot of the writers who enjoy it, you know, the fans who enjoy the bat flips, the K-struts, this new wave of, like, let the kids play. But you have a lot of these, like, in sports media, a lot of these play-by-plays, especially, like, for the Fox, you know, the Fox Midwest, Fox Northeast, all that kind of stuff. All these guys have been doing it. The radio announcers, 20, 30 years, like, they're established people, Bob Uecker, like, do you think that plays into the way that maybe this younger generation looks at it? Or do you think this is going to be just another case of, you know, the younger generation saying F you to the older generation?
That's a super good question. So the best way I can put it is that, so for the first year this year, I actually dug deep in my pockets and actually purchased MLB TV. So I've gotten the opportunity to listen to every broadcast. I've watched more games this year than any ever before. And so with that opportunity came to listening to more broadcasters, seeing their style, seeing what they think. I'd say 90% of Major League Baseball broadcasters are doing a phenomenal job of hyping these guys up. If not more than 90%, hyping these guys. It's not just MLB broadcasters either. There's shows, MLB Network, it's across the board, whatever you want to call it in the media. They do a good job. The 10%, unfortunately, and it's just like this anything in life, it's always that 10% of the negative naysayers or whatever you want to call it. They're always getting the attention. The negative Nellies is what I was looking for. A negative Nellies are always getting the attention. They're always getting the spotlight. I'm not going to call anyone out, but there are certain people that I think are stuck in a certain generation, and they're not wrong for it, but unfortunately they're holding the game back because of it. Because you're entitled to your own opinion. If you think the game was better in 1985, that's fine. That's great. But to have the platform that some people do have and to say, Bryce Harper doesn't play the game the right way, I'm not going to watch him. Now you're having an effect on the current state of the game. And that's just not me. I personally don't agree with that mindset. I don't think that's a good strategy. And personally, I don't think you should have the platform that you do if you're just constantly just banging on the game for what it is. I don't think that's a good strategy. I don't think that's a good mindset. I don't think that should be the way baseball is run. But as a whole, I think broadcasters, media members, again, they adapt really well. I think everyone's for everything that's going on with baseball. Major League Baseball itself is doing a better job, too, of acclimating to the new culture of the game, too. So I think as a whole, it's getting better. It's doing well. But I think we could all do better as a whole, that's for sure.
I like it. Yeah. It's it's just so interesting to me because of the you know, how regional baseball is. And it's, you know, you're probably our first real media member as far as the national baseball side, to at least who has like a daily portion, doing what we do. So, it's really nice to have this side, especially from somebody who's younger, like I said, because this is, you're a person who in 20 to 30 years, we'll see if gets stuck in his ways or not with what the game is now. I can't imagine. So you seem pretty, pretty chill, but
yeah, I'm going to be going in 30 years and saying blank is not as good as Fernando Tatis Jr. He never will be. That's going to be me in 30 years.
I love it. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Harrison, do you have anything to throw in?
Yeah, just how you said you weren't going to throw any broadcasters under the bus or anything and spark some controversy, but are there any guys that you've noticed from watching all these different broadcasts that you'd want to shout out, like guys who do it the right way, guys who don't like kind of get stuck in their ways and accept the new era that the sport's moving into?
Yeah, I love that question. So yes. So starting first and foremost, I think the San Francisco Giants, and I know I told you I grew up a Giants fan. I think they do an excellent job. They're broadcasting. Dave Fleming, Dwayne Kuiper, Mike Kruko, Dave Fleming and John Miller too. Dave Fleming is the only guy that is at all young, really. And I don't mean to say that these guys are old farts. That's not really what I'm going for. I'm just saying, you know, these guys grew up in a different generation, Piper, Kruko, and Miller. They hype up the Giants in a non-biased way, but a positive way, better than anyone else. I think they're all ex-players too, except for John Miller. Kruko and Kuiper, they were both ex-players. So they played in a different era. You would think they would be more biased towards that older ways of the game. They're not. They really do a good job of, you know, whether it's Brandon Crawford in the field, whether it's Buster Posey at the plate, whether it's new guys they get, and especially this new strategy that the Giants have. They're very analytically driven. That organization is incredibly frustrating right now for a team that has had success in a non-analytically driven system. They had 3 World Series in the 2010s using the non-analytics for the most part. So to see this entire culture change, and they're in a rebuilding system right now, their broadcasters do a really good job of still supporting the game for what it is. And I think if I were to shout out anyone else, I think I know I'm going back
Brian,
to my
class, Brian but, Anderson, probably. Yeah.
Sure, yeah, but I was going to go Padres. I was going to go back to San Diego, of course.
Dan Orsillo.
Yes,
exactly.
My
guy. There's a lot of really good guys. I do think Cincinnati, I want to talk on the situation real quick, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, go right ahead.
Somebody mentioned on Twitter, I don't remember who it was, but he basically said, I think whoever left his microphone on, Tom Brenneman's microphone on, should get called out as well. I just want to say, I think that guy is an absolute hero in this situation. If it was at all intentionally, if it was an intentional move to expose a person who thinks those thoughts and is involved and has the platform that he has, I think it was the right move. There's a lot of people that may disagree with me on that. There's a lot of people that might agree with Tom Brenneman's stance. I think if you have those thoughts and you have that thinking still to this day, you shouldn't have the platform that you have. I think you need to change or be left behind because we don't need you, in my opinion. That's just my thoughts.
I appreciate that. That's for sure. I think that's a great sentiment.
Yeah, going back to that, like, there are so many kids that grow up listening to their team's radio broadcast, their TV broadcast on a nightly basis. Like, I'm in Michigan, a Red Sox fan. My dad's a Tigers fan. So pretty much every night, Fox Sports Detroit, watching the Tigers game, listening to the Tigers broadcast. Every time I'd go anywhere with him during the day, I've got, 590 out of wherever in Michigan, listening to the radio broadcast. And, like, those Tigers announcers were literally my childhood. And I'm not even a Tigers fan, but I love listening to Tigers baseball because I love listening to their TV broadcaster and their radio broadcaster. And those guys were, like, sports media icons to me. And they were just like regional baseball guys. So when you have kids in the Cincinnati area growing up listening to Tom for 30 some odd years and then have him go do something like that, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
I think you hit a really good point there too, because it's not just media too. It goes with the players too. So let's say hypothetically, you have an 8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid who's playing little league ball, and he sees Mike Trout smiling on the field and maybe does a little bat flip and, you know, he's excited to go to practice the next day and emulate Mike Trout. But right after, and I'm not saying that the Angels broadcasters do this, this is just hypothetical, but let's say the Angels broadcasters say, that's not how you play the game. You shouldn't be bat flipping Mike Trout. This is ridiculous. That kid's going to think, well, maybe I shouldn't be having fun playing baseball. Maybe I'll go try soccer. So I just don't think people realize the amount of influence that media members have. From the broadcast platform to the writing, really everything. I just think, adapt or die. And I think it's important for kids to see why baseball's fun. And I think it's getting better and better, but long ways to go.
Would you want future children pimping home runs like Jose Bautista did to, the Rangers? Did he do that too? Or Tim Anderson to like the Royals?
I think there's a time and place, personally. I don't want my kid yelling and screaming at the guy for pimping him because he's a sore loser. I definitely don't want my kid doing that. I want my kid to be pumped up after a strikeout because he worked his ass off
to throw 90 plus miles an hour, and he got himself to this spot. You deserve to be pumped up. You deserve to show some emotion. At the same time, like, I think there is a time and a place. So if you're up 10-0 and you hit a bomb and you bat flip and you're taking your time around the bases, just have some feel when you're playing the game. I think a lot of it's common sense. Where that line is drawn, I don't know. I think for the most part, people have an idea of when to act and when not to. I think it's just kind of a common sense thing.
Have either of you been pimped like that?
No, thank God. Somehow I haven't. How about yourself, Danny?
I missed the question. I'm sorry. Repeat it one more time.
So have you been pimped like that, like a Tim Anderson pimp job?
Yeah, no, for sure. I've given up my fair share of homers, that's for sure. But that's the thing. It's like, if I am going to give up a long ball and I want to experience some emotion and excitement after a strikeout, he should be allowed to do the same thing when he hits a bomb. So it goes both ways. It's a two-way street. So look, if I give up a home run, he beat me. Let him have his celebration. There's a time and a place. Let it be. That's the way the game goes.
I have a 9-month-old daughter. Do you have kids?
Not yet. We're waiting a little while.
Hey, that's probably a good idea. I have a 9-month-old daughter. She turns 9 months old today, and I just, I am a person, and I'm glad I'm now older. I wish I was a few years younger, so that my high school days maybe I became a better hitter to toss the bat a little bit. But I'm a very emotional player. Some people call it cockiness. I like to say it's confidence, because I could usually back it up, that kind of stuff. And I'm glad that she'll be growing up in this era to play softball and have some flair of her own, because I think, like you said, I mean, with the broadcast, like, deterring a kid from having fun and enjoying the game. Like, there's nothing more than I want her to enjoy this game, whether it end up being softball or if she plays with the boys and plays baseball. And she always makes an appearance in the show for whatever reason, because I do love her so much. But I think that's very well put, what you were saying about, not deterring a kid, not throwing your own opinion to reflect what you believe in the game, because media people have such a big platform that they can change opinions just like that, especially an 8 or 9 year old whose day-to-day impression and what they believe can be swayed by a single sentence. So I mean, there's a video on YouTube that's like 4 or 5 years old. It's titled like the last week of like 2008 Milwaukee Brewers playoff or something like that. And I can watch those games on repeat. And every time Brian Anderson calls Ryan Braun's grand slam, I watch this game. I was at my mom's house, 10th inning, hits a grand slam. Every time he hits gone and you hear his voice crack and you hear Brian Schroeder say, yes, I choke up, because I know, I go back to that moment. I'm dead serious too. Like, I go back to those moments when CC gets the double play in game 162 to make everything go on to the Marlins and Cardinals game. I get choked up, and I could watch it on repeat. And so it's like, while I'm a mega baseball fan, obviously that's a little bit different than somebody who, a kid who might be playing multiple sports, but I'm glad that you brought that up for us. So last couple things here, Danny, I would love for you to talk about the results of what has happened from your diaper tweet though, and elaborate on that more. We kind of got on a tangent. You didn't say the full story.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. So I'm sorry. I sometimes do that, but no.
No, you're fine.
No, I was just sitting at home, essentially, to give you a little bit of context here. I was about 10 minutes away from the Capitol, sent out the tweet. Sure enough, the blast happened. And so I think my first reaction was I dropped my phone. I literally dropped, because I was watching the game on my phone. Parents had a different program up on the TV. I was watching on my phone. I dropped my phone on the couch. It was utter disbelief. I couldn't believe it happened. Step two was finding out where to buy adult diapers. figuring, I was on shift too, so unfortunately I had to wait till after my shift. I had people from the Bay Area, which is about at least 2 hours away, depending on traffic. People from the Bay Area around Sacramento asking me, hey, when are we meeting up? I want to go on the run with you. Hey, when are we doing this? And I, as much as I wanted everybody to join because of the pandemic, I essentially decided it was probably best to keep it low key. For an embarrassment aspect of it too is probably best, but no, it was cool. It's really smoky in Northern California too. So by the time I got down to the Capitol, there weren't as many people there as there normally would be just because it's really smoky. It was kind of hot out at night and, the pandemic too. So I got some stares. I got some people that were extreme social distancing from me just because I was wearing a diaper and and then too, it was off to a rocking start too, because there's a lot of police and security because it's a capital, it's a government building. And we were trying to look for a parking spot and we happened to park backwards on a one-way street. So we're facing the wrong way and I'm changing into my diaper and I'm trying to, you know, it's just a bad look overall. And so some people gave me crap for wearing the sliders underneath the diaper. And
I was going to.
That's fair. That's a super fair argument. I'll say this. I love my job and I love my company. I would have been unemployed if I would have worn just the diaper. I have a feeling I would have been without a job if I went full diaper.
That's totally understandable. I don't know if you saw, there was a thing going viral today about this company in Toronto that makes brokinis. It's basically like a one piece, like bikini looking thing for men. So there's a good chance I end up wearing one of these on the show. So I'm all for, I can't confirm or deny these things. So no, I'm all for, you know, letting it all in the breeze. So, but talk to me. So you then out of this, there's some good stuff. Talk to me about the Dingers for Diapers and what happened and is that Rady Children's Hospital?
Yeah, you got it. So yeah, Dingers for Diapers. I was trying to, it got so much attention, so much engagement, which was great. I was loving interacting with all the different fans from around the country. It was awesome to see, but I wanted to make it something a little bit better than just some random old guy running around in a diaper. So I kind of found a connection. So my fiance, she's a nurse at a pediatric hospital. And then there was kind of a connection there with the Dingers for Diapers. So the four meaning the Grand Slam, the diapers meaning me wearing Grand Slam. And there's kind of a connection there. So Rady Children's, they do awesome stuff for the entire San Diego County. I had some people reach out to me and said, they saved my child's life. I literally had someone message me and say, they literally did everything for my family. I owe them everything. Please buy me a shirt. Hearing those stories was just so down to earth. And it was really humbling for me just knowing where everybody's at and knowing the experiences that everybody's gone through. So for me, that was the most fulfilling thing for me. The run, the interaction, engagement, it was fun, but actually turning it into something positive, really cool. So far we've raised, it's not been that much. The shirts themselves, unfortunately, ended up being kind of expensive. But we've raised a couple $100. So at the end of the day, we turned an old guy running in a diaper into a couple $100 for a children's hospital. So I think it ended up being a really cool thing.
That's awesome, man. I am so glad you came on with us. Thank you. Do you know if there's any other way to donate, or how should anybody just reach out to the Rady's?
So. Yeah. So they have their own website. You can look them up on Google. But also, if you still want to buy a shirt, I made an order today for the shirts. But if you still want one and if you want to donate, I can figure something out here. I bought a couple extra too. So I might not have your exact size, but I might have your exact size. So just reach out to me at Danny Vietti on Twitter. The shirts are $25 each. All the proceeds will go to Rady Children's Hospital. Like I said, I have some extras that are being sent over. They should be here in about 1 to 2 weeks. So yeah, just reach out to me via Twitter and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Awesome. Danny, thank you so much. Thank you for giving your time. Thank you for being an awesome member of the media and bringing some fun to Twitter when it can be a cesspool sometimes. So.
Yeah, no, anytime. Hey, I had a good time on this podcast, man. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you know, we usually go by the motto aggressively mediocre. So for you to say you had a good time, I think that's an upgrade to just mediocre.
No, it was good all around the board, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course, Danny. You have a good one. Thank you so much for your time. All right. What a great interview from Danny. Absolute. I think he's going to be great. For baseball media. Absolute. He's a great writer. Great cause. A couple hundred bucks goes a long way. Even the dollar can be stretched a long way when it comes to great causes like a children's hospital. So please, if you're inclined, go donate to either your local one or Rady's in Slam Diego, and help Danny out. Go ahead, DM him if you wanted dingers for diapers or dingers for diapers, diaper for
dingers for diapers.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, seriously, awesome interview. Probably one of the better ones we've done. But now on for the rest of the show, my guy Danny. Hopefully he'll be back on. Let's see. You thinking NFL preview since we forgot last week?
I think we build the suspense on the NFC West a little bit and get our least favorite topic being the NBA out of the way first.
I agree. That would be legend. Wait for it.
Baby, week three
back. I truly couldn't have placed that any better.
Yeah.
Some of you longtime listeners, I'm drinking a Truly while we record.
Yeah.
If you'll remember from our original Truly Outstanding. Yeah. You know, let's just say I need to be back on the Truly train because things are – anyways, you can continue.
Yeah. Here's a little podcast tip 101. When hosting a podcast, your most exciting topics, you want to kind of push toward the end to keep people wanting to listen all the way through. So as a general rule of thumb, you can put the board – you put the your least exciting topics first. That's why we're going NBA first. As I mentioned in the syllabus, I really just went on the spiel to make that reference. I kind of forced it, but you got it.
I loved it. Nobody else has to like it, just we have to like it.
No, it's going to be like you and my friend Jenna, the only ones who might get that. Yeah, Luka Doncic, Mavs, Clippers last night. Luka taking the league by storm, has Twitter going crazy. Game-winning shot at the buzzer to tie the series at 2, making a lot of people question if Luka is the best player in the NBA, if not the best top 3. We had a little debate in the Student Union Sports Slack about it today, so we figured how topical would it be for us to give you our top 5 NBA players currently of the present day. Are we going to – let's do this like we each give 1, we each give 2, we each give 3, and we'll like side by side them. I think our number 1 should be pretty obvious, but you could have 1 and 2 flip-flopped.
LeBron James.
Yeah, LeBron James, best player in the NBA. That's hard to debate. Yeah. Hard to debate. Number 2 – you could make the argument for Kevin Durant being number 1. He is probably still number 2 just based on LeBron having the age advantage, the numbers advantage there. We didn't
and
go
him
over
not
the,
being able to play this year.
Yeah, that also helps. LeBron's never had to miss a season. We didn't go over these lists before we recorded, so we might have the exact same list and this being a very awful topic. Number 3,
it could be.
Number 3, Hoppa, who do you got?
Kawhi Leonard.
I'm going with your boy Giannis.
That's certainly a viable option.
Certainly a viable option. You notice that we don't have much to say because we just aren't huge NBA guys. I think Kawhi is all around more solid than
better.
Giannis, but Giannis has shown more, I think. Like he has a higher ceiling, but he's not as like complete as Kawhi. But I think Giannis probably gets but, the slight edge there.
But it's not about what the ceiling is. The point is currently.
The ceiling is the roof, Hoppa.
Ceiling is the roof.
Giannis there. Is third. I might have just talked myself out of that own pick in my argument for him, but no, Giannis is number three.
Okay.
Bring us to number four.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, all right, sweet. This is awesome.
This is awesome.
Well, all right, we're going to count down from three and say our fifth player at the same time. I'm going to count down from three. Ready? And I'm going to go 3, 2, 1, and then you say it. Okay, ready?
All right.
3, 2, 1.
Damian Harden. Lillard. Oh.
You're an idiot.
No, dude, I've been saying this for years that Dame is the best point guard in the NBA with Kemba Walker coming up second. Dame Holy has been shit. So underrated his entire career because he plays in Portland and nobody ever pays attention until this playoff run because he finally got to play a team that wasn't the Golden State Warriors who had four Hall of Famers, four All-Stars on their team. The world finally got to see literally just Dame said
somebody – How are you going to say they have four Hall of Famers, which Draymond Green is not a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I don't – three Second Hall of Famers. All, I meant four All-Stars, yeah. Said Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That. Yeah. I'm glad you walked that back because I was about to go off. But Steph, if you're going to call Steph a Hall of Famer, which he certainly is, and you're going to call him a Hall of Famer, he's certainly better than Dame.
No, because Dame's a Hall of Famer too.
What did you think? Oh, I don't know about that. I'm on the Dame train as much as anybody, but he's certainly that's a tough one.
I got on the Dame train very, very early, and I'm telling you, if you somehow listened to our long lost episode when I went on my Charlotte Hornets, you know that I'm a Hornets fan. You know that I'm a huge Kemba Walker guy. Never
published that.
I that was the joke. If you somehow found it, okay.
Oh,
you know I'm a big Kemba Walker guy.
That is funny.
And Kemba Walker, you could make an argument when he was in Charlotte, was the most underrated player in the NBA. But Damian Lillard is actually the most underrated player in the NBA. It took him not having to play four All-Stars, three Hall of Famers in the first round of the playoffs for people to finally see that and then see him steal game one against the Lakers. I think they're getting demolished right now. It was ironically enough 24-8 on Kobe Day last time I looked.
Yep.
It took that 49 to 31
now.
For people to finally put some respect on Damian Lillard's name. And it's well deserved. The dude deserves better than Portland. He's going to be a trailblazer for life. He's already said that. They need to give him some help. He doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to join a super team. He's in a slightly better situation than Kemba was in Charlotte, and it's kind of sad. Unless they bring someone to him, somehow develop through the draft and get him some help, he's just going to be in the same spot his entire career, and he's never going to get – you're never going to get to see the full potential of Damian Lillard because he's dragging the sorry 8 seed of a team just on his own. On his own.
What? I think there's somebody else who's just as underrated on that team, and you're not giving him enough credit. CJ McCollum.
Yeah. CJ McCollum is also a stud, but he's not freaking – like, he's not the Klay Thompson to Damian Lillard, Steph Curry.
I disagree. I'd argue CJ might be better than Klay Thompson.
CJ McCollum's not a Hall of Famer.
I mean, yeah, he's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's in the same boat that Dame is.
He's not as good as
CJ McCollum is so slept on. I like how we say we're not about the NBA, but then we're just going off about the NBA. This Trailblazers team is as good a option as Dame's had. Ariza, people kind of sleep on Zach Collins. He's going to be good. Dame, CJ McCollum, and Nurkic. This is a good team that like has potential.
Yeah, this is the best team he's had, and he's still an 8 seed. He finally got out of the first round because, like I said, not playing against four Hall of Famers or four All-Stars, three Hall of Famers in the first round. And now he has to go up against LeBron and AD. Granted, that Lakers team is awful aside from those two. If one of those guys doesn't show up, then okay. But he's got Whiteside. They don't have anyone that can guard AD. LeBron's going to get his. But if you let LeBron get his and you can stop his other option, then you're solid. But they don't have anyone to guard Anthony Davis. So, like, if you have to play the Lakers, that Lakers team, for the next 4 or 5 years, then Dame's just going to waste a career. Opposed to if Damian Lillard played on the Warriors team that won however many championships and however many games, I guarantee you that team is substantially better than what they were with Steph Curry.
No.
Yeah.
No chance.
100%. They might go undefeated that one regular season if they had Dame instead of Steph.
No chance. You are a crazy person. You're certifiably insane.
I will die on this hill that Dame is the best point guard in the NBA.
What a shitty hill to die on. You're going to get just trampled by tanks and other artillery. What a terrible take. Dame is a career 37. You're going to tell me that Damian Lillard, a career 37% three-point shooter, is a better point guard than Steph Curry, who shoots like 43% for his career and is like substantially better.
Yes, because a point guard's job isn't to shoot the ball. You're not supposed to shoot first as a point guard. A point guard's a facilitator.
Damian Lillard shoots so much, he scores like 60 points like three times a season.
Yeah, because he's that good, but he's also a star facilitator.
Oh my God, you can't be more hypocritical right now.
I'm not. I'm saying Damian Lillard is the best point guard in the NBA.
And you're wrong.
I'm not.
I can name probably four that are better.
Who? I know. Let me guess. What you're gonna give me the stupid? You're gonna say Steph. You're gonna say Russ.
Russ. Absolutely.
And I don't even know who you're gonna other take. Those are the only two you can make arguments for. Even though I think it goes Dame, Kemba, then Steph. But
what a crazy person, psychopath you are.
So we can both agree that Luke is not a top five player in the NBA.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's top seven though.
He's top seven.
He's probably number six.
So who's
actually six would have been AD, and then seven would have been Luka.
Okay, I would have probably had him at six. So similar
ahead of AD.
Yeah, I'm not a big AD guy.
You're not a big listen to reason guy, I don't think.
So let me ask you this.
Oh yeah, ask me it.
This is about Luka. In 4 years, is Luka the best player in the NBA if he keeps at this rate?
Let's see. No, because Giannis will still be here and still be like a legitimately good player.
But you don't think Luka has a higher ceiling than Giannis? And take all the Homer out of this, like with Giannis being your guy, being a Milwaukee guy, does Luka not have a higher ceiling than Giannis?
It's kind of interesting. I don't know, because like they both do it differently. Like Giannis is going to score a couple more points a game, and he's going to get a couple more boards, and he's going to have a few less assists. But otherwise, like if Giannis continues to shoot 30% from three, they're essentially the same player, and Giannis is just more efficient.
Okay.
And he'll be 26 in December, so he'll be 31, which like Russ is 31 right now, still putting up triple doubles every week.
So what does Luka have to do to be the best player in the NBA? Because there's certainly a lot of people that think he's on that track.
Kill Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's what he has to do.
Okay. So essentially you're saying
he has to murder Giannis.
Essentially you're saying that Luka is the KD to Giannis's LeBron.
Absolutely.
Okay. Honestly, that's fair. I think it's the same as LeBron KD. You can flip-flop it either way, and there's a fair argument for both sides.
Yeah, so this is what I had with a separate group chat is I was saying like it's tough to compare like what like Luka, so Luka and Russell do basically the same thing. Like their stats are basically the same. And so it's like it's tough to compare like what those guys do versus how do you compare them to like what a Dame does. Like a guy who's not going to get as many boards because he's shorter and going to facilitate more. Like, how do you say which is better? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of, it's tough to like it's all, they're all basically the same position, but they all have different ways that they do it. And I don't think there's a good right answer, but as far as like what you're saying, like, yes, like Giannis is going to be Luka's LeBron or Luka's Durant.
What if Luka wins 4 rings to Giannis is like 1? Assuming that's like either of them ever win a ring.
That's realistic.
I mean, that Mavs team can be filthy here, especially with him and Kristaps.
I think there's a point where you have to I think team championships are way different than like individual accolades. Like, I think that's why I think partially like the LeBron MJ thing is dumb, because everybody's like, 6 rings, 6 rings. And it's like, yeah, I mean, look at who he had. He had Scottie fucking Pippen. And like, obviously you could say the same thing for LeBron. So it's just like, why are you gonna like, why does the championships matter when both had just like, they're the best players on the best teams in the NBA that year? That's at least my personal opinion.
Not to get on a tangent here. So what does LeBron have? 4 rings to MJ, 6, or does he have 3?
I think
he has 3. Yeah, so he has half the rings, arguably probably double the individual accolades. And you're saying that makes LeBron the GOAT over MJ? Not to get into an MJ, well, LeBron GOAT argument, but
MJ, I'm pretty sure has like the defensive accolades, which LeBron doesn't. Which,
yeah, LeBron's never won Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, which is,
I don't think he's ever been first team all defense. Unless it was in the last couple of years. I know at one point I'm that was sure true.
Awards. Nothing that sports defensive. All league. He's been all defensive first team 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And was LeBron all defensive or MJ? Second. LeBron.
Oh, so he has been all defensive team?
Yeah, he was all defensive first team 5 times. Oh, and then
what an awful stat by me saying he hasn't.
Well, I mean, but like the point remains, like he hasn't been like Defensive Player of the Year, which is like the majority, what is the meat of the argument. And so it's just like, well, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's like bad defensively. I think like obviously we'll never be able to compare era, and it's always going to be a futile argument, but I think LeBron playing when he does in the world of the super team, beating a team that won 73 games. I think the thing that points to his greatness the most is two of his last, like a couple of his last playoff games, where the one where he had was at game 1, the J.R. Smith game, when he could have just taken the layup to win. He had 51-8-8 and they lost. And then the other night, game 1 for the Lakers, when they lost to the Trailblazers, he had, what was it? It was like 40-17-16. Let's see. I'm going to try to double check my math here. Let's see. Oh, 23-17-16. I think he had 40 and like 10 and some change. But yeah, 23-17-16, an almost 50% shooting from the floor, and they lost by 7. Like, obviously, anybody can have it any night and that all that jazz, but I don't know. It's nobody will ever be right in that tangent or argument.
Yeah. So
said LeBron averaging 10 assists at 35 years old is pretty insane.
We just took a segment.
Did you like my "well, actually" on Twitter?
I don't know what you're referring to.
So it was, I know one of our newest members of the student union, Donovan James, retweeted Kendrick Perkins. Kendrick Perkins said that Michael Jordan was retired at 35.
Oh yeah, I saw a couple people say the same thing.
Yeah, so okay, so here's what was funny about that to me, because Michael Jordan's birthday is in February, so he turned 35 like just before the playoffs, and he won a championship at 35. But because he was 34 at the beginning of that season, Perkins is technically right because that would be considered Michael Jordan's age 34 season. Because, like, all of these seasons have – you have to be – it's like the month before the season starts, the age that you are at that time is what your age season you are. It was, like, the way that it's looked at. So, technically, Kendrick Perkins is right because after that season when they won – when he won that championship in 97, he retired and didn't play his age 35 season. So, I will actually eat it. Some people didn't like it.
Yeah, leave it to our one of our couple analytics nerds at Student Union. That would be our own Bryce Hopwood. Look at us. We took a segment that we did not care about, and we talked about it for entirely too long. Look at us. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
All right, on to the NFC West. Awful transition, but hey, aggressively mediocre. Last year, obviously.
There's one thing that we do. It's we're consistent about the brand that we promote.
Yeah, I mean, we're for our brand. For our brand. Aggressively mediocre. Can we get that on a t-shirt that just says aggressively mediocre on the front?
Oh, I'm sure we can make this happen.
So the NFC West, we've floated a couple t-shirt ideas on the show. None of them have ever come to fruition. I don't think
anybody's even tried to design it.
Yeah, the NFC West, obviously last year they had a Super Bowl team in the San Francisco 49ers. There's a lot of hype in this division. Last year, the Cardinals finished in last at 5-10, followed by the Rams, Seahawks, and obviously the 49ers winning it. Per tradition, we're starting at the bottom. Arizona Cardinals finished 5-10-1 last year. They tied the Detroit Lions first game of the season. People forget week one tie. Hoppa, thoughts on the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, they trade with the Stooges. Stooge alert.
From the Houston Texans.
Bill O'B-Boy. Bill O'Bob. Fucking Stooge. I'm not a big Kyler Murray guy. They have a terrible offensive line. Adding what's-his-nuts is a pretty good DeAndre Hopkins. That's a pretty good pick there. Pick up, especially for essentially like nothing. I don't think this team gets much better. Let's see, their schedule looks somewhat favorable. They play the NFC East and they play the AFC East. So I'm going to put them at a cool 6-10. Yep. 6-10.
All right. Yeah. Kyler Murray, I think he takes another step forward. This season, obviously having the best wide receiver in the NFL helps with that, along with old reliable Mr. Larry Fitzgerald. Like you said, offensive line is pretty bad. The defense isn't horrible. They're not great. They're kind of like us. They're aggressively mediocre, but they can hold their own when they need to. I mean, he's got weapons around him. Obviously, they need help with that offensive line. That kind of reminds me of a Andrew Luck Indianapolis Colts team before they beefed up the line for him, and then he just retired on us, which was a year ago today. I bawled my eyes out. It kind of reminds me of that. Like Kyler Murray has the legs to scramble around.
Steph Curry has real estate in your brain. Let's go.
Dame Lillard, best point guard in the NBA. But Kyler Murray, he can scramble. He can get away from all of these sacks that his offensive line is going to be giving up. He's still going to get sacked a lot. He has the legs to extend the play when you have Larry Fitzgerald and DeAndre Hopkins waiting for you downfield with his arm strength. You never know what's going to happen. I'd say somewhere around the 6-10, 7-9 mark is probably realistic for the Cardinals. I think they're going to be better. I don't think they're going to be a ton better. Bringing us to a team that went to the Super Bowl two years ago and very much underperformed last year, being the Los Angeles Rams, a team that is now Todd Gurley-less. They still have Jared Goff at quarterback, which we don't really know if he's good or not yet. He stinks, and then he's good, and then he's eh. So I think either he's going to get good again or the cycle is going to start from the beginning and he's going to stink and he'll be good next year. Don't really know what we're getting out of Jared Goff. He has a lot of weapons, and Robert Woods and what's his name? White guy, Cooper Kupp. He's got two very solid receivers there. He lost Brandon Cooks. Am I correct? Yeah.
Nope. Yes, you are correct. Aaron Donald on the defensive side, but they do. So last year, Daryl Henderson made a name for himself, which was nice to see. Also drafted David Edwards last year. Let's not forget how fucking good that guy is. Top tackle in the entire college football landscape.
They also drafted the most underrated tight end in that draft class, being Bryson Hopkins. That's not just a homer pick. The dude's good. They also have arguably the best defense in the NFL, which always helps when you're not scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, and Cam Akers, who they obviously drafted with their first pick, which came in the second round. Cam Akers out of Florida State. He's an absolute stud. I'm excited to see him. So him and Henderson as a dual-headed monster, two very prolific collegiate running backs who don't get enough credit for what they did in their college careers. Henderson being from playing at Memphis. I think that's going to be a pretty, pretty sick two-headed monster that could be very good with how fucking smart Sean McVay is. I think they improved from 9-7. I don't know. Is that even possible, though, with how they're going to all probably piss pound each other in that division?
Here's my thing with the Rams. They're either going to be 9-7 again, or they're going to be like 11-5.
That's what I was going to say. I'm going to go right in the middle, goddammit, 10-6.
All right. And that, speaking of 11-5, we have last year's 11-5 record, Seattle Seahawks. They've really been, since they acquired Russell Wilson, they've practically been like the New Orleans Saints, just a model of consistency. They've been to two Super Bowls, they've won one. You know what you're getting with Russell Wilson every week, not to sound like Colin Cowherd and just sit here and, blow the guy. But, he's good. And he's got DJ Metcalf. He has Chris Carson. What?
Metcalf must be DK Metcalf's brother.
I said DK.
DJ Metcalf must be DK Metcalf's brother.
I said, like DK. Said DK. No, it's my crappy internet.
And you got Dustin Johnson on the brain.
Who's the other receiver? Did they draft a guy, or they have another good wide receiver who I'm blanking on?
Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, they have Tyler Lockett. He's got offensive weapons. They're good. And we're a little far beyond the Legion of Boom, but their defense isn't exactly awful.
No, not at all. There's still talent there. With their first two picks, they took Jordan Brooks, super underrated backer out of Texas Tech, and then Daryl Taylor, defensive end from Tennessee, who went high or mid-second round there. So, they got they spent a first-round pick in 2019 on a defensive end and a safety. This team, like you said, modeled consistency. They're just as good as ever. Everybody kind of gets a year older, but with another year can sometimes be another year of good stuff under your belt.
Experience.
That's the word. Thank you. That's the fucking word I was looking for. Yeah. 11-5. I think they probably stay the same or go 12-4.
All right. And then we have last year's NFC champion Super Bowl loser, San Francisco 49ers. They went 13-3 last year.
Enter in one of my favorite movie quotes of all time there, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, when he goes, "Lou, say her."
Maybe if you can give me that sound clip so I don't have to cut it myself, I'll enter it. Good in. Deal. San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy G at quarterback. They signed Raheem Mostert to a contract extension, which is a very bold move, and that's coming from me, a guy who is a Purdue fan. Very bold move after only seeing half a season of good stuff from him. I get it. The dude is Tyreek Hill fast, but is he Tyreek Hill good? I don't know. He certainly wasn't at Purdue, but that could come down to Daryl Hazel and that awful coaching staff. Their defense, fairly solid.
Shout out the guy, the former Purdue running back who never came on the show.
Yeah, ghosted us. Shout out Tario Fuller. Follows me on Twitter, though. They traded DeForest Buckner to the Colts for the Colts' first round draft pick, 13th pick. Aggressively mediocre. I don't even remember who they took there, and I honestly don't care. It's pretty much the same team, but losing DeForest Buckner is a pretty big blow. I honestly believe they used that on another defensive lineman to replace him. The 49ers are good. Yeah.
The 14th pick.
Yeah, 14th, 13th, same difference.
Yeah, they took a little guy from South Carolina named Javon Kinlaw, who's going to be
That was it.
not to mention, you know, him and defensive tackle with Nick Bosa on the end is going to be pretty interesting. So, yeah, this team continues to get better. Only five picks in the draft, two first round picks. They take Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State. Kid's a burner, just like Debo Samuel. Obviously, they play a little bit. They play the position a little bit differently, but they get better. I think with those two picks in the first round, and not only that, but when you get better from a team that was the Super Bowl runner up, you sign Kittle, you sign Mostert, you have your quarterback already under contract. Your offense put up the second most points in the NFL last year, and your defense was in the top 10 in points given up last year. You're in a pretty okay fucking spot.
Yeah, I think the only concern I have with the 49ers is Jimmy G's ability to throw the ball and move the ball downfield. I get you don't have to do that a ton when you have freaking George Kittle, who no one can guard. But when your running game could potentially be very inconsistent because you don't know what you're going to get out of Mostert. He needs to be able to throw the ball. And I think he went through a stretch last year through the playoffs where he was completing like less than seven passes a game, but he was only throwing like seven or eight passes a game because they were just handing it off to Mostert because he was on an absolute heater of the century. That's my only concern with this team. I don't think they're going to be 13-3 good. I certainly think they're still going to be relevant in the division. I think the Seahawks are probably going to be better than them, but I still think they're going to be very good, and they're still going to be a playoff team, more than likely. Depends on what you get out of the Rams.
Yeah, that's just it, is how big of a leap do the Cardinals legitimately take? How big of a leap do the Rams, do they look like the team from 2018 or not? That's going to be the question. 49ers in this team plays the NFC and AFC East this year, so that could be, you know, four pretty easy wins for the 49ers. They go to Dallas, but I mean, otherwise they're home against the Eagles. That's a long trip. I'd probably say take the 49ers. So I don't think 13-3 is out of the realm. Do you want to make our official picks?
Yeah, I'll take the Cardinals at 7-9, the Rams at 10-6.
Hold on. You're going way too fast for somebody who's trying to write this down.
The 49ers
at... Cards were what?
Oh, my gosh. 6-10. Or 7-9. 7-9.
Wow. Hold on, dude. Dang. 7-9.
The Rams are 10-6.
Wow. Okay.
The 49ers are 11-5.
Ooh, losing two more games, huh?
And the Seahawks are 12-4.
All right, so Seahawks win the division. Currently, as it sits, we have the Saints losing in the – or you have – sorry. You have the Buccaneers losing in the divisional round after winning a wild card game. The Saints in the Super Bowl, but not saying what happens to them. And you have the Packers in the conference championship game and the Vikings losing in the wild card. So,
yeah. So,
we should probably put together like a bracket of what the actual playoffs look like so we know where.
Yeah. So, obviously, the Seahawks are losing. I guess they're going to lose to the Packers.
Way to play through the contact there. It was very impressive of you.
You know, it's mental toughness out here.
Awesome. So, how do you feel about the Seahawks?
They're losing to the Packers.
Wow.
Aaron Rodgers finally gets past Seattle.
I don't want to talk about it, but thank you. So that would mean that you have them in the Super Bowl, but you also have the Saints in the Super Bowl because you said that the Packers were going to lose in the conference championship game.
Yeah, but the Packers aren't the Packers have to play a first-round playoff game, so they beat the Seahawks.
So you're saying the Seahawks lose in the divisional round?
Yes. They lose to the Packers.
Okay.
And then the Packers lose to the Saints.
Okay. Thank you. I needed that. Does that mean the 49ers are going to be – so you currently have, for your NFC, you have two – so you have one wild card team. And that's – you have two wild card teams, technically. So your two spots are full, so they wouldn't make the playoffs.
They must lose some kind of tiebreaker.
To the Buccaneers at 11-5?
Yep.
Or to the Vikings at 11-5?
Do I have this playoff bracket full already, and we haven't even done the NFC East?
You have everybody but the division winner of the NFC East.
Okay, yeah. So – yeah, the 49ers, I'm sorry, Jimmy G, you're not going back to the playoffs after a hard-fought 11-5 season. The NFC is going to be brutal this year. Absolutely brutal.
That's what a time. I'll try to make a graphic tonight and try to get it figured out for us.
I hate that. Us doing this off the dome over the course of like 8 weeks makes it really tough to remember what we already said.
Yeah, it does. All right, I'll finish up here. So we can get to other stuff. Cardinals go 6-10. The Rams are going to be disappointing and go the same 9-7. We're going to have the Seattle Seahawks. They will go 12-4. Boldly, he said.
Just like that. But you have the Steelers going like 14-2 last week.
Yeah, shut up. But the 49ers will go 13-3 again. Let's see. So my playoff picture as it sits, the Packers losing in the conference championship because I was a bold person, but that was coming from the wild card spot. The Vikings losing in the divisional round. And then the Saints also losing in the divisional round. So somebody has to win here. I'm going to have the Seahawks losing their wild card game? That sounds very bold. To the Packers. Yep.
Geez, so we're both saying Aaron Rodgers finally gets past Seattle.
We can finally move on from the Fail Mary and other disappointing games. Yes. It's going to be the Matt Hasselbeck, Al Harris. Matt Hasselbeck, we want the ball. Pick six. Start overtime. Right. 49ers are going to be the representative again. They'll get back to the Super Bowl. No Super Bowl losing hangover here. So they are of the Super Bowl for your boy.
Oh man. Do they win it?
I don't know. You didn't say anything about the Saints, so I am also gonna hold off until we have the other half of that filled out.
All right. So that wraps up the NFC West. We'll be back next week with the AFC West, I guess. Drew Lock and the AFC West to wrap up the show.
Big Drew Lock guy.
Big Drew Lock guy. To wrap up the show, I've had, pretty big personal news today. So I'm not going to say what I was doing, but I was out and about, living my life, bada boom, bada bing. And this morning I noticed that my guy, Bryson DeChambeau, partnered with a company that I've hopped on their train, but no free ads on this show. A company that I like very much, a company that takes care of my body very well. He partnered with them this morning. The same company partners with a very prevalent golf podcast that Hop and I are both fans of.
And reference a lot on this
and
show.
And reference frankly, quite a bit. Said podcast and my guy Bryson are not on the greatest terms. I think he thought that they were his guys, and they turned around and they betrayed him when Brooks Koepka, big bad Brooks, came
Blake.
And tried to bully him. Yeah, total Blake move. I, however, have not left my guy Bryson's side. When I have a golfer that I like, just like Tiger, through the thick and thin, I was always with him. But this golf podcast has kind of taken over the Tiger fanboy. So, you know, I'm all in on my guy, Brooke. Oh, geez, not Brooks Koepka. Screw that guy. Bryson DeChambeau.
You couldn't have flubbed it worse right there. Oh, no.
I just sculled that chip over the green from 40 yards. Oh, man.
That's almost worse than Rory on a Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday scaries big time. But I'm a huge jeez, I did it again.
He's gonna hate you.
I'm absolutely rattled right now. But I commented on Bryson's picture announcing this partnership, and I tagged the host of said podcast, and I said, oh man, because he's taken their sponsor. He likes the comment. So I'm officially in Bryson DeChambeau's inner circle. I am team Bryson. I am letting you know, Bryson, I'm talking to you directly right now. When you see this, when we tag you on Twitter, when we tag you on Instagram posting this clip, I am your guy. I am your guy in the media. What those guys are to Tiger Woods, I am to you. Whatever you need me to do, I'm there. When
he's got the hat to prove it.
When Blake, yeah, I am team Bryson. When Blake's,
no!
When Blake's out here trying to bully you, trying to say you don't have any, he doesn't have any majors, guess what? You're going to go out, you're going to hit the ball 40 yards farther than him, and you're going to win the next four majors in a row. You're my guy. We're riding this to the top. You've got me bulking. You've got me on the Bryson diet. I'm eating more protein than I ever have in my life. We're in this together, my guy. You and me, Shooter, Bryson, to the moon. To the moon.
Right with here. The Puma logo on the front. Let's go, baby. That is awesome. That was totally unbeknownst to me. But I will take a quick second. I might actually release my picks this week. Last week, I only took Tommy Fleetwood. He was like plus 115 to play better than Tiger on the weekend. That hit. So I'm now 3-6 and a total of like up $150 my golf bets this year. So I'm a profitable golf gambler, so you can't call me a bad golf gambler.
Yep, buy a car with your money, send your daughter to college, and then we'll talk.
All right, sounds good. I will. Everybody, we appreciate you listening. This has been another episode of Lecture Hall. Check out Danny Vietti on Twitter. Check out the Dingers for Diapers. Check out Rady's Children's Hospital in Slam Diego. Go check out Harrison, a.k.a. Shooter, a.k.a. Twitch35 on Twitter. Check me out, Big Hoppa. You know it. It's at Beastie Hops on Twitter. Check out – you have to post a picture tomorrow with the Puma hat on.
Oh, yeah. I expect Bryson to reach out to me. I mean, I'm going to be his guy in the media. Like, whatever he needs me to do, I'm there. I'm coming to his defense. I'll fly out to these tournaments. And I'll just stand there and be like his guy. I'll wear the hat. I'll match him head to toe. Me and Bryson, we're going to the moon. That being said, class is dismissed. Thank you for listening.